This is AM Studios Podcast, where we curate all the knowledge, resources, and power you need to help you create your business in entertainment, podcasting, music, tech, art, fashion, and more. Every week, we share everything we've learned at AM from the greatest minds in the business. Let's go.
Copyrights the musical and the tree work, the copyrights and the sound recording. Okay. So Aidan Gareth are specifically represent the way that the sound recording gets monetized. So you have come out of your studio, you've come out of your studio session, or you've come out of the mixing, the mastering process, and you have the banger. Okay. The banger is sitting as an MP3 or a WAV file.
Okay,
that is the sound recording, and because you have now gone through this process of making sure that all the rights holders are taken care of and everything like that, let's say that you own the sound recording. And you've got a 20% deal with a featured artist or somebody who came to feature on your beat, and you offered them 20% or 30%, or maybe it's a 50-50 deal between you and somebody else. But you are the person that now owns the sound recording. You are looking to make sure to get the most money back from that sound recording, right? You want to get rands in, well, dollars in your pocket, okay? And one of the people that can get you the most dollars in your pocket is In Grooves. Murat?
Grand. 100%.
Take it away.
All right. So I speak to people about distribution every day. I try and find labels that we can distribute to, for artists we can distribute for. And the main part of my job is finding the right artists that I think we should be working with, etc., and then working alongside with our team. So when I was asked to come today, I asked if Wade would join me to give you guys a much better understanding of exactly how, like I like to always say, the pup and place works behind it, you know, is I can tell you what we have to offer, and he can explain exactly how he does it. But the thing I've realized when I talk about distribution, and it's scary that it's not just young up-and-coming musicians, is we meet with label owners, already very established artists, and it always blows my mind how little many musicians understand distribution and how they're not understanding how to get the most art out of their distributor, or understanding exactly what it is their distributor can offer them, you know. If you look at the DIY distribution sites, it's about knowing how much are you getting paid per stream. Everyone wants to get paid. We've been discussing this. Is understanding that if they tell you you're getting 100%, are you getting 100%? Is that distributor going directly to each store, to Apple, to Spotify, to Boomplay, Deezer, or are they going through a pipe? And so for us, for instance, many of you would probably know us more as Electro Mode, and now In Grooves bought Electro Mode. In Grooves is owned by Universal Music, which means that we go direct to every single store. That means there's no pipe between us and the store. So you get the maximum payout you can get. And there's a limited amount of distributors that offer that, which we are one of them. It's important for you guys to know that, you know, delving into the meat and bones of what you are getting. What a DIY setup, for instance, is I'm starting out in a band or started writing songs. I'm recording songs in my bedroom. I don't have a track record. There's no official distributor that might be interested in me. I've got nothing to show them as of yet. It's a great way to get your music out there. It's available to everyone and works. Gets your name out there, gets you to the point to make a deal with a distributor, with a record label going forward. You know, our thing is that we are not just a distributor. We distribute music, we get it online. A lot of people still think distribution and labels is distribution. We just put the music online. We do much more than that, is that we pitch for playlists. We pitch for banners, for editorials. That's for all releases we do, We also have label services, which Wade will delve into a little bit more. And stop me at any time if there's something you want to jump in and say. Is for us, it's about what more can we offer you, you know, other than just getting your music out and pitching for playlists. So it has got to a point where distribution is no longer just getting your music up online on all the platforms, but servicing that music and us opening the doors for curators to hear it. With the label services, it means that the means to plug your music to radio. We use a system called Play MPE, which means that we deliver, it's a delivery service we use to get music out to all radio stations. It is it's a one-off cost, and it goes to radio stations, and you can you get a login where you can actually see, has somebody opened your music? Has somebody listened? Have they actually played it on the station? You more interactive, you can see what's going on. Different to Radio Monitor, but I don't know if you want to jump in a little bit on some of the other services, from the marketing, the digital, the YouTube, which is obviously your primary role.
Sure. Just off the back of what James was talking about, if you go to our website and you go to the distribution tab and you scroll down, there's a section there for artist and label resources. This is open to anyone, and you can download your split sheets right there and then and start using them. Okay. Cool. We like to support artists in any way we can. So let's say you get signed to Ingrooves and you come through, then you'll eventually get introduced to me. As you know, all platforms these days have gone video. Right? So this is like the most super important part of it, hey?
Wait, before you carry on, you just said before you get signed to Ingrooves, and I just want to be clear, what he's talking about is not signing signing as a label. So you're not signing your masters to Ingrooves, you're signing on to Ingrooves in this instance. He's saying you're signing a deal in which you will distribute. We'll unpack this a little bit later. I'm gonna let you carry on. But you're not signing your masters. Okay, this is not a mastership owning. So you're not signing a deal like you're signing with a record label. This is a distribution deal where you own your masters and you're signing a specific right to them to take your masters and distribute them around, where they take a percentage, or there is a financial agreement between you and them of some sort, but you retain the copyright. Okay.
Yeah, you still own 100% of your music. And when your deal is up with us, you and your music and whatever content you've distributed with us stays with you. Sure. So you then get introduced to me, and I'll talk to you about what your marketing strategy is like. What are you looking to achieve, you know, and how can we support you in your way? You are still the driver of your label. You still have your own direction, your own creative direction. And we'll say, how do we support you? You, the driver, will be your engine, pretty much. You say turn left, you say accelerate, we'll help. So, as I was saying, YouTube video, massive. As you know, Facebook, Instagram, also high priority on video content, short form, apparently. But I always try and get my artists to focus a bit more on YouTube and longer form content, because long-form content can always form your short-form content. So if you have, for example, a video-based release strategy, you will have a visualizer, a lyric video, an official video, a live video, all of that, maybe even a remix, which you put into video content. You take your visualizer, you then sample a piece of it, and you go put it onto all your short form content, pushing people back up to YouTube. You then, a week later, release your lyric video. You chop out a piece of the hook, you put it as short form content around your other platforms, telling people, go back, check the full video on YouTube. Remember, YouTube pays, eh? Then you put out your official video. Great, you put out your official video, chop out a piece, put it on small, all on short form. And that's like the sort of sales funnel in marketing. We call it a sales funnel. So now, once you have all that out, you could even gamify it and say, okay, guys, if I reach 20,000 views or 10,000 subscribers on my YouTube channel, I'll do a live performance for you guys, you know? And then that's your fourth piece of content that you're putting out, you know? And this format, this is a decent little strategy for people to use, because it kind of applies to everything. But every piece of content and every release strategy is different in reality. You could focus more on stills. You could focus more on new skins, you know, on your social media. As you guys know, Spotify for artists, Apple for artists, you can upload motion art. You know, that's something else to talk about. And a marketing strategy comes down to that. How much content do you have to share and to talk about? And once you start collaborating with other people, because as you said, this industry, you got to be a very special person if you can do every single role, you know? So we collaborate with different people, and those other people also talk about what's going on. You tag them, they tag you, your reach goes out. Then, apart from putting together that content strategy, then you start looking at mainstream media as well, getting your song to radio, getting your official music video on TV, getting your video to stores like Amazon and Apple, who actually post music videos, you know? And once that goes out as well, there's more talkability to you to talk about. And these days, you know, everything is rushed. Artists love to rush a release. They'll make it on a Wednesday, they'll master it on a Thursday, and they want it out by Friday. But it doesn't help anyone. It really doesn't help anyone. If you ever pitched for yourself in Spotify, you'll know that once you've pitched a single, you can't pitch for another release until that one's out. The curator team that's curating playlists also need time to listen to these tens of thousands of releases every week and decide which songs are going into which playlists. So you've got to give them the time as well. So we like to ask our clients, you know, give us 6 to 4 weeks from upload and ingestion. So once you've uploaded it into the system, 6 to 4 weeks before the release day, so that you can then go and pitch to all these different services, giving them enough time to look at what you're pitching, read your press release, you know, look at your bio, look at your social media following, and decide whether they want to actually place you and where they want to place you. Well, good. Do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I think from my point is, you know, as a young artist now trying to sign with InGroove, you might wonder, what is the next step that's going? And one of the first things I learned when I was working in music distribution is that the song is still everything. We can't give you a number one hit. A good distributor, if you give them the time to work your release, can open those doors for your song to be heard by the right people. No amount of marketing can make a song a hit. If the people don't want it, you can't shove it down their throat. We've learned that now, you know? And it's just about the fact that you should know that your relationship with your distributor should be one that can grow, so that you have a family-like relationship with your distributor. We've had many artists come through our stable that have started on. We've got different deals. We've got 80-20 deals where it's just straight distribution, and we get your songs on the platforms. We pitch for playlists. We don't plug to radio. We don't pay for music videos. We don't do that sort of thing. But the deals are fluid, which means that as your numbers increase, as while we work together, as your social media numbers, your streaming numbers, if there is potential to know that you can have the relationship with your account manager and go, listen, my last single did 20,000 streams in 6 months. I've been listening to what Wade has been telling me, doing the shorts. I've been pushing on TikTok. I'm up to 80,000 streams on this last release, and it's been 3 weeks. And we will look at it too. We also look at, follow our acts that we have and go, there is potential. Yeah, this act might have hit a ceiling now where a video could be the thing that could push him through. Which means that we're now at a place where we can renegotiate your deal. And it's really important that you know that you have that relationship with your account manager and with your distributor. And it kind of was the wrong time to bring this up. I just should have brought this in before. But, you know, it's like from my side, as an artist signing, the song and the music is the most important thing. If you want to ask, what is it we're looking for, you know? I know it's horrible when you send through a song and I ask for links to your social media handles. I know for a new artist, that's like the most intimidating thing because you're like, damn it, man, I've got like 900 followers. Remember that like Maphorisa had 900 followers at some point in his life. It's not the sole thing I'm looking for when I review an artist. First of all, the music, is there potential there? Then looking at the socials is how do you communicate with your audience? You know, what is your rapport like with your audience? Is because you can have banger songs. You know, I've had a couple submissions now of late, not too many, but they still come in where you get a song and the artist hasn't even got social media pages. So I'm like, how do we push this? In the end of the day, how do we get this out there, you know? So it's about, like, if you're going to try and get a deal with a distributor, is making your brand as attractive as possible. And then we will help you make it more attractive. But that's how you get the attention, is make sure you've got a good song. Make sure you've got everything looking as hot as you can get it to look, you know? It's because we sign many, many acts that have 1,000 followers on Instagram. They're just getting out there. And you know that 600 of those got people or family or went to high school with them or go to church with them or whatever the situation is. But it's how you sell yourself. So I know I get asked, that's one of the main questions I get asked from young guys, because you know, when you're trying to sign over a Black Diamond or somebody like that, it's not even something we're asking for because it's such public knowledge. With you guys, we're buying into so much more, partnering with so much more than just the songs, and knowing that there's a look and a feel and the way you communicate, and we're going to be working together with us, so we want to sell that music as best as possible.
You guys must have a lot of questions. I'm sure there must be questions here. Okay. I just want to say from my side, this is I'm going to be asking questions because I'm working with an act that I would like to explore, this kind of thing. That what I've heard here has been like really exciting for me as well. From that thing. So
if I might add just one more thing, just to kind of close off the circle. Once, you know, I think another very important thing from a distributor is correct reporting. You know, We have an app called Trends Now. You can actually download it from an app store that all our artists can literally log on their mobile device and see where their songs are playing, how many streams they've got, all of that, you know. And there's an entire finance department that they can contact and talk to. How do I read my reports, you know? How do I find this particular service? And analytics. Because analytics, your social media analytics, your sales, all of that will determine how you should market and focus your music in order for it to grow. So, I just wanted to touch on that. I thought awesome. Reporting is so key.
And so I was saying I've got two questions. First one is more along the lines of releasing your music on Spotify and Apple Music. When we look at social media, you have a lot of techniques that are ideal to get you, I don't know, exposure, growth, views, likes, and things like that. So first question would be around releasing your music or dropping your music onto those platforms. Would you suggest something along the lines of doing it on a regular basis if you've got the music, or is it okay to do it like sporadically? And then second question would be specifically on the platforms of NFTs with music.
When it comes to a release strategy, regular releases, regular consistent releases, I feel are definitely a stronger way of releasing music. Although it also comes down to, are you releasing singles? Are you releasing a full body of work? You know, because that would make a difference. I read a very interesting blog post the other day about whether it's better to do a surprise release or whether it's better to do a strategy release where you'd build up to the actual release coming out. And the they actually compared bigger artists because they got the market there. It was between Drake and Taylor Swift. And at the end of it, Drake's planned release was a lot better, but Taylor Swift's surprise release was better. And I think it comes down to your market. You know, how engaged are your fans on your pages? How easily can you reach them? Do you have an email list that with direct access or a WhatsApp group, you know? Because that is a really valuable leverage to have just to instantly access somebody. So I think a more regular release strategy might keep people engaged, you know? Yeah.
I'm going to add to that. So I think somebody might have, I think I've told the story before, but I was having this conversation with Maporisa, and in the conversation I asked him, but he needed something from me. And so I said to him, well, I'll tell you, but first you tell me how to be like a successful producer, you know? And his response, I think, was probably one of the like most life-changing like things because of how simple it was. And he literally just said to me, produce every day and release as often as you can, you know? And to tie into your thing, so the one, you know, the what Wade was saying there, the one value of releasing often is obviously because you're getting regular, because of just having that regularity and building a sort of a regular fan base. There's something else that's very, very important, and something that I think, especially as a creator, is something that we all shy away from because of our it's very scary to put yourself out there, you know. The thing about putting yourself out there regularly is that if you want to know what the best version of yourself as a creator is, you can only do that with the feedback, with a feedback loop that you create with you and your fan base. You can't decide what the best version of yourself is. Your parents can't decide, your friends can't decide. The only people that can guide you to be the best version of who you are as a creator is fans that give you feedback. You have to get the shits. You have to know what's cuck. You have to know what's not working. You have to know what isn't working so that you can give your fans what is working. Okay. And the most like the incredible examples is that if you think of any of your favorite acts, okay, think of Casper and Mafikizono, and think of Maporisa, and think of Drake, and think of things like how many actual songs, like if I just say to you, what is the maximum, how many Drake songs can you name right now? Okay, what percentage of all of the Drake songs that have ever been released in history, what is the percentage you're gonna get, okay, as the biggest Drake fan? If you think you're the biggest Drake fan, you know, if you think of Mafikizolo, think of like Six Mabonde and all those albums from the 90s. Okay, those albums from the 90s and from 2000s is what led to Ngeke Balunge and what led to these like Thandolwethu and all those things. They wouldn't have had those tracks. They wouldn't have had the bangers, the Ndihamba Nawes and Udakwa Ntalos and stuff. They wouldn't have had those tracks had it not been for all the crap that was sitting on the B-sides and all the extra album tracks that they released, because there's so much feedback that they're getting the whole time. You know, they've performed all those other songs so many times to know that, you know, like, you know, to get to the corner, you know, Like all of those tracks that they would never have gotten there had they not had the feedback from the audience the whole time. They're giving, allowing the audience to tell them what they like and what they don't like. And so that's, you know, for me is a very, very important part of the, just the practice of being a creator, is to actually get out of your, the internal thing of like, I'm going to release it when it's perfect, you know? And you sit there and 3 years later and 4 years later and 5 years later, it's like, you know, what, you still got nothing. Nothing's out there. Still haven't heard anything. Yo, but I'm a good singer, man. You must hear me. You know, like you're gonna, I'm gonna go knock on the door of the label. Guys, I am the best thing, you know, and they're gonna, you know.
Your hard drive is full of songs.
That's it. Anyway, so I just wanted to just to get onto that thing to support what they're saying is that, you know, the, especially as a, you know, at the beginning, I would say release it often, as much as you can.
And then I'm glad you asked about NFTs, actually, because when that started to come out, and I think it's just still too new for us to actually really gauge how important it's going to be. But do you think Buster 929 fans are going to go buy NFTs? No. You know, I think it's those sort of, like, that sort of sales are for your, I don't know, Beatles and stuff that is super nostalgic, or, you know, that sort of stuff. I don't see our everyday releasing now sort of hits going that way, especially in the South African market or the African market in general, unless there is that nostalgia feeling to it where you want to actually own this piece of something, you know?
There's also, very much with the niche artists, you know, I know a lot of artists who will never get the streaming numbers, the kind of music they pop play, you know, guys doing dream pop on a, you know, like anything artsy, left field, but their fans want them to carry on creating. And it's about their fans knowing there's not hundreds of thousands of people streaming this music. So NFT makes it possible for their favorite band to carry on creating, which I think that's, for me, where I see NFTs right now is, it's the fans committing to being a fan of this band and going, your art is so valuable to me, I'm willing to put so much more in than just stream, because streaming might not keep that niche sound alive, you know.
Good afternoon. My name is Tulagayo, and my question is, as a distributor, from which organization do you guys get your profits? Because we have Sambro for writers and we have Kapasu, so I'm wondering, are you guys gonna get your profits from Kapasu or from the sales?
These guys do not earn from Kapasu, because Kapasu doesn't service them. So Kapasu is set up, they are legally set up to represent songwriters and publishers. Okay, so people who are involved in the musical and literary work, those people, Kapasu is legally set up just to make sure that those people get paid royalties anytime money changes hands in this world. So these guys don't actually earn from Kapasu. In fact, they actually have to pay Kapasu. Am I right? Yeah. So in fact, what the law says, okay, is that I can release you, if you have written a song, okay, I can do a sound recording and I can go and release that song, provided I pay you a royalty, okay? And that royalty number is actually set, okay? The trouble is, it's impractical for me as the sound recording person to go and find every single composer and do like one-on-one royalty splits with each person, okay? So the law then says what they set up is the facility where there can be an organization that manages the flow of money from the sales of the sound recording, of which a percentage by law has to go to the person who composed it. So when I was talking about the sound recording, the record label is allowed by law to release a sound recording with this person's copyright, okay? And the law actually says, as long as if this is a cover of the musical work, the law says you can do it, provided that this musical work has been made public somehow, okay? Otherwise, you have to get the actual person's, the songwriter's approval, okay? So in the case where it's the first release of a song, then you automatically have the songwriter's approval, because in most cases the songwriter worked on that track or is one of the artists who released it. But like, if I wanted to do a cover of Jerusalem, the law says I can do it with, I don't have to go to the songwriters and get their permission. But what I do have to do by law is I have to pay a percentage to the publisher, to the person who owns the composition. Okay. And the law has now set up Capasso to do that. Okay. So if I go and release and iTunes pays me 10 Rand, okay, a portion of that is going to go to Capasso. And that's what Ingrooves would do, or any other distributor. So DistroKid or TuneCore, whoever, has to pay Capasso.
Sorry, I know as a service, because I used to work for a streaming service before Ingrooves, the actual service reported back to Capasso, not the distributor. So
iTunes is actually paying Capasso, not Ingrooves.
So these are all the streams, and we report back to them. And the service has the agreement with the rights collection on what percentage they're paying for each stream.
So it's actually even a step above Ingrooves. Does that make sense? So iTunes has received, let's say, 2 Rand in total for your song. They first are going to pay Capasso and report to Capasso. Okay. And after that, let's say there's 1 Rand 90 left. From that is the money that then gets paid to the distributor, which then comes to the artist. Okay. And that's for the sound recording. Huh? If you are the composer, there's the portion that iTunes would have paid to Capasso, and you as the composer would then get it from that channel. You see what I'm saying? This is why it's so important, I'm so evangelical about understanding this from before, because there are so many ways that you can get your money. Okay, I'm not going to touch on Samro and Sampra today, but that's exactly the same thing, is that something goes out on radio, 5FM or SABC or whoever it is, they are paying Samro for the right to play the song, and then Samro is going to pay you as the composer, and they are paying Sampra the right to play your sound recording, and they are paying Sampra. So you as the owner of the sound recording and as the composer should be getting money from Sampra and from Samro if your money is broadcast in public on radio. And if your track is sold, you as the owner of the sound recording will be getting money from Ingrooves, but as the composer and the publisher, you are also getting money from Capasso. So this is why you need to be so clear about exactly what roles were being facilitated by which people. Question at the back.
So with your guys, if you have to distribute my song, and there will be an artist channel which will have my name and topic, but if I don't have 1,000 subscribers and 4,000 watch time, will I still get paid for the views?
Okay, so you got to think of YouTube, because it's a music service and a video service. YouTube is God in services for me. So audio streams, that name where it says topic, that is essentially YouTube music. It's the music that we've distributed to YouTube on your behalf. Okay? Then you have your own channel where you're uploading music to, and that's the channel where you need to have your 1,000 subscribers and 4,000 watch hours. Okay. In order to monetize your channel. Okay. Now, YouTube is broken up into assets. So you get a video asset, an audio asset, and an audio video asset. Okay. So the audio asset is what we distribute to YouTube. And then we use Content ID to claim audio assets on people who upload your music to YouTube on their own video. So let's say someone has a video of them driving in the countryside and they've got your song playing, we'll claim that and generate revenue off of it as an audio stream. Okay. Now you got your own channel. This is where official artist channels come in, and they're so valuable. We'll help you get your artist channel verified. You don't need to meet those thresholds. But now you start to upload videos with your music on it on your official artist channel. Now we get to claim as an audio video. So it's both the video and the audio is linked to it. And that's even a higher percentage compared to just a normal audio stream, if that makes sense. And then, yeah, so the big thing is, I think it's almost done away with in terms of YouTube and copyright issues, because we claim across everything, even if it's user-generated content using your stuff. So you're making money even when anyone else uploads. And YouTube can take it even further. Once you've got an official artist channel, you can start to sell your merch there. You can start to sell tickets to events. I mean, it's really a beautiful platform for any artist, you know, especially artists who are up and coming. You can self-release just off YouTube, you know. So, yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Well, I mean, I want to just hop in there quickly this is going to require a little bit more like sort of experience over the next, in your life, but you need to be very clear that YouTube is not representing, when you watch a video, you are not, even though you are hearing the song, okay? So if you are listening, let's say you are watching Aspele Langa, okay? You are not hearing the sound recording. You are watching and hearing what is legally called the cinematographical work, okay? The cinematographical work is a completely separate copyright, okay, that requires a synchronization of the video with the sound recording, okay? This is really, really important, because the Copyright Act says that the cinematographical work is the sequence of moving pictures that includes all of the audio within it, okay? So have you ever heard of sync deals or licensing deals? Okay, I mean, well, not licensing deals, sync deals, okay? The term synchronization is what applies when the person who is releasing the cinematographical work, the video, okay, gets the approval from the owner of the sound recording to synchronize that sound recording copyright, the master, with the video, okay? But what is very important is once that audio gets included in the video, it's not the sound recording anymore. It's just the cinematographical work. It's the cinematographical work where the owner has gotten the approval, the license, the synchronization license from the owner of the sound recording and the owner of the musical work. This has to carry the synchronization authority or approval for both the musical work and the sound recording. Okay, does that make sense? Okay, I know I don't want to complicate it too much, because I've already given you quite a lot of information. But that is one of the distinctions, and that's one of the reasons, the application of what Wade was saying, is that they've released it. They're releasing your audio, okay, to YouTube Music, okay, and that doesn't come with a 4,000 hours watch time, whatever. You own that thing. You've released it to YouTube, and you've said to YouTube, "You go and find me the money," right? And YouTube is going to go everywhere. If you happen to be the owner of the video and you haven't got your 4,000 hours or whatever like that, and you release the video, because they've released it through content with a content ID and they've released it through YouTube Music, they're going to go get the money. They're going to get the money from the playback of it, regardless of whether you have got your 4,000 hours. The money is going to come from the monetization of the sound recording, okay? Not from the monetization of the video. The monetization of the sound recording is how they're going to get the money back to you. Okay, but there is an additional layer of money or revenue that can be generated from advertising and all that stuff that is specifically related to video, okay, that you have to cross the threshold of 4,000 hours for. So your monetizing of your video is not related to your sound recording. Your monetizing of your video is related to the cinematographical work. Okay, does that clear it up? Does that kind of give a better understanding of the thing? These are things that I'm unlocking for myself, like, month by month as well. So it's not like, this is not obvious. This stuff is not obvious. Very, very like, yeah. Okay.
Afternoon, Bart Jennings. I have a question which relates to independent artists looking to pitch their music for distribution via Ingrooves. Is there a more direct approach to that, or besides being scouted by your A&R team or maybe via your website platforms?
via the website platform is where we find a lot of artists. info@electromode.co.za is where we still live. I'm happy to give out my email address, yeah, which is gareth@electromode.co.za. It tends to be a little quicker, as working through the submissions can sometimes take time. So if you want to send me music, send me any music you already have online, links to your Spotify or Apple profiles, send me handles to your social medias. If you have songs that you're looking to release, specifically that haven't been released, send me as much info as you can, you know? And then we will get back to you and tell you if this is something that we can work with right now, if it's something that we feel has the potential to work with. But the more info you can give on yourself, the better. A lot of people, I think sometimes, like I said earlier, it's quite daunting to share all of your handles, etc. The more info you can give, the better.
How many submissions are you guys dealing with on a weekly basis?
Sure.
Really?
Yeah.
15 to 13 a day.
It's a lot. And with In Grooves, now, you know, Africa has become a territory. I spend a lot of my focus is on other African countries. So now I'm getting the info@ingrooves.com, Africa, as well. But it's great stuff. So there's a lot of great artists that we've come that have come through the ranks through there. So submit. You guys have got a inside lane here. You can mail me directly. It will make the process quick. Okay, yeah. Gareth@electromode.co.za.
Hey, hi guys. My name is Tim. I'd like to ask, do you think language is an advantage when doing music? Because when I look at these Nigerian artists, mostly they do their songs in English, and you find they are good songs here, but they are done in maybe vernacular languages. Does that affect maybe the market or anything in terms of reaching more audiences?
I'll let you go on the marketing side. I'm gonna give you a personal answer after this. Go.
So this is also very personal. I've actually spoken to a lot of people about that exact topic and why. And it's funny you use Nigeria as an example. I was speaking to an American, and he says in America there is a ton of Nigerians, and that's why the music translates overseas so well, you know. And I think the vernac part of it, especially for us local artists who are performing in their own vernac, it rings home, but it's not easily translatable. And this is another reason why I'm going back to YouTube and video. It's such a translatable medium to use, because you might not understand it, but you can still understand what the video is telling you. And this is part of also the YouTube algorithm. If you then translate everything into English and put subtitles, the YouTube algorithm will say, okay, there's English subtitles, I can serve it in the UK. Or if you put German subtitles, they'll say, okay, I must serve this video in Germany. It's incredible. So I think that's my own personal opinion around it. I mean, you know, it definitely makes a difference.
I'm going to give you my response, which is that your decision not just your language, but your decision on every single piece of music that you ever do should not be guided by, it's my opinion, so you can take from it what you want. Your decision making should be based on the feedback that you get from your tribe, not by the market that you want to hit or by what's going on in the Billboard Top 100. Or trying to copy somebody else or anything like that. If you are an Amapiano artist and you want to be an Amapiano and your tribe is Amapiano, then you are going to go into that market. But if you are going to just have a stab at Amapiano because you want to be big, because you want to just try to do what the biggest thing is out there, if you want to sing in English because you think you're going to get the most sales in English, all of that to me is ignoring, is very overtly ignoring your fan base or ignoring the potential feedback you could be getting from your tribe. Oliver Mtukudzi didn't sing a word in English, if I remember correctly. I'm not sure if he ever sang a single word in English. And I would much rather spend my whole life, you know, trying to speak the truth of Olowum Tukudzi than I would, you know, trying to just be an English, you know, singing in English because that's where I think the money is. You know what I mean?
And I agree with you wholeheartedly as to why you write in certain languages and it feels correct. But I also don't think you should close yourself off to the idea of finding ways to have more people engage with your music. Sometimes it might not be necessarily singing in another language. It might be featuring somebody that sings in another language. Or like where just, I didn't actually even know you could do that with the subtitles on YouTube. So I learned something today. Is, yeah, I agree with you 100%. I had breakfast with Bongo Zwiwe Mabandla once.
Great example.
One of my favorite singers. And we were talking about the songs, and I explained how much one song meant to me. And he said, "What do you think it means?" And I said, "Well, this is exactly, I don't understand Xhosa." And I said, "This is how I felt. This is what I felt you were singing about." And he was like, "You were 85% on the money. Music can, you don't always have to understand the language, but I do think try and find any ways you can to get more people to engage with your music."
Which one was it? Ngawe Mama.
Or Mlilo, those are my two favorites.